The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Episode 68, SEO Lawyer-Focused Marketing and More. My conversation with Chris Brickens, CEO of On The Map, an internet marketing company for lawyers. Chris is the CEO of On The Map Marketing. In its leadership, On The Map Marketing has become a notable law firm marketing agency. On The Map Marketing serves over 300 active clients with their portfolios. Enjoy. Have you been enjoying the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast? Consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast feeds. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
I appreciate you being here. And to get things started, please tell us what your current tech setup is.
All right. I think we have to start with the bigger machinery, right? I'm a Mac guy, so okay. I have a MacBook Pro.
I love you already.
It's funny. I think the heavier finance people are in Microsoft because they love Excel and it's always like, oh, I love Excel. And then the tech people are usually on Mac. I have two screens. So the screen I'm looking at right now is actually one of the wide screens. It's like LG widescreen. Instead of having two screens next to each other, I just have one wide screen and then my laptop on the right on the little stand. Then I have a Yeti mic for podcasts or any video.
Is that and the Snowball?
I believe so. Yeah, I think that's the one. My brother got it for me. He's like, hey, you're trying to build your personal brand. You're only legitimate when you have a mic.
And he's, I don't know if he's right on that, but it sounds better. It makes you sound more legitimate when you've got a good audio. I was talking to some other prior guests about this. I've recently updated my mic from a Blue Yeti, and I now have a Shure MV7.
Okay.
And you will hear the difference. I promise you. If you consider like upping your mic, because the Blue Yeti was about $120.
You're actually right. I have the Blue. Yeah.
And what I have costs about $250.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously, when you start, you're like, you don't want to invest all this money just to find out you went south. But then, after 3 years of doing this, I upped my mic. And the little trick about this is that there's a different type of foam that you want to put on your mic that we could talk about later, that you basically use the next version Shure MV7's pop filter. Pop filter instead of the one that actually goes with this one. And it does a better job. And it sounds almost as good as the next version, if that makes any sense. So like it's like a longer pop filter versus the shorter one that comes with it. And actually you can tell even more difference, an improvement, if you will, by using this.
So then I can pass this one on to someone.
I don't know if you have kids or someone in your office or kids or anything like that.
Yeah. That's a great suggestion.
And also, you can't tell from where you're viewing from the video, is that I have a hanging mic stand from the roof.
Oh, hanging one. See?
So it's off the desk.
And I've heard that placing it up from ceiling down is better than from bottom up.
That much I don't know, but if you can look at the video, the monitor, see, do this right. So right about here, like towards the edge of the screen, that's where the mic is.
Ah, interesting.
So not only that, you get it off camera. But I know you got more tech to share, but I want to go back a couple of steps. You said you have the MacBook Pro. Which one do you have?
Oh, it's the 2022, not the latest one. So the version one before. So
okay, so you have the M1 chip.
Yeah.
You have the M1 chip. And do you have the 14 or the 16?
I have the 14, not the bigger one.
So what you seemed a little hesitant there. Why do you think it may not necessarily do the job?
Well, so if you want a little heavier machinery, so to say, when you're crawling big websites or you're running big ad groups, I do that occasionally, not in day-to-day setup. I think for bigger data set analysis, then you need those processors that can run things a lot faster. I don't get as technical in my day-to-day, so the one I have is pretty good for the things I'm doing.
When I upgraded my computers recently, I ended up getting the Mac Studio. the little box. And I got the Ultra chip, which is the fastest that you can get. That's just for my desk. And it really cooks. So I got a little bit more than I needed, but I deliberately did that so that I wouldn't have any issues about things slowing down when I'm rendering video or converting podcasts, et cetera. And it works wonderfully. Just something
that makes sense. It makes sense. If you're doing the editing and you're uploading the video, executing those tasks, you need to have a computer that can process that quickly. Nothing worse than just sitting there and looking at the rainbow wheel.
Oh, wow. Oh, don't even get me started on that. So let's move forward a little bit about your tech. You talked about your monitors. You talked about your mic and your computer.
Yes. Okay.
What else do you have?
Let's continue. Wait. Okay. I have one of my favorite pieces of technology I have are actually these headphones for podcasts and sound isolation. I need to get one of the bigger ones, like the ones you have. But these just been godsend. I run in them. I do hikes. Basically, any given moment I need them, I have these wireless headphones and they're amazing.
Who are they?
It's the by Apple.
Bose?
Dre, the, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Well, not the Bose.
I just had the name. Dr. Dre started in them. What's the name? Hold on. We'll get him right.
Yeah, up. I'm looking for it too, of course. Oh, Beats.
Beats by Dre. Beats. There you go.
Okay.
And Apple did a big acquisition. I think it was $1 billion years ago. Beats by Dre, and it's not even the latest model, but they're great. They have a little charging box, and I, for some reason, the Apple wireless ones, they just fall, like the classic ones, they fall out of my ears.
Oh.
I guess I have a weird form of ears. So these have the little clip that goes over your ears.
Yep, so it's really
nice when you're running or mountain biking or doing any type of activities, they're always there. And their charge time's great too.
Okay. For these, the AirPod Pro Max, these don't fall out of my ears.
Right. It'd be hard to.
Yeah. So tell me what else, please.
Then I have a wireless keyboard, also from Apple, and a wireless Apple mouse. So it's a nice wireless setup.
Which mouse do you use? You use the regular point and click mouse, you know, the rolling mouse? Yep.
It's the one without any buttons. It's just a smooth surface.
I've got the touchpad.
Yeah.
And your keyboard, did you get the one with the fingerprint sensor?
No, I got the simple, just a wireless one. No sensor on it.
No fingerprint for security?
Yes, that's the older one.
Yeah, that's an older one, but that's still a good one. The one thing I love about this with the fingerprint sensor is that it's so great when you're updating your software and asking for your password, or if you're doing Apple Pay or whatever. It's just such a convenience. But please share what else you got.
Coming to an end almost here, I have a Nexigo web camera.
Okay.
Probably not the most impressive one, but it does the job.
You look good.
And a little, I don't know how much of a tech this is, but just a piece of
boom arm.
Yeah, that holds my mic and makes my table look cool.
Excellent.
And actually, I do want to talk about my table. I love my table.
Please.
Today, I had a little injury a while ago, but I have a really nice standing desk.
Oh, who makes it?
Fully standing desk.
Okay.
That I got, it's actually a funny story. I got it from a colleague of mine. He's one of the founders of sister company of ours. And he came to my office and I had a really small desk. And he looked at my desk and he said, "What is this desk? You're a CEO. You need a serious desk." And he bought me this fully desk, which is really awesome. It's a wooden surface, wide desk. I really enjoy it. And and it's a really convenient, nice standing desk.
And I know that they are a godsend because sitting is becoming like the newest medical problem that everyone's facing today because everyone's sitting down and not moving. Yeah.
So I pulled my Achilles 6+ months ago when I decided to play some basketball again. And I used to play basketball in college. That's how I came to US. And I just thought it would be fun to go play. And I'm a pretty avid runner, but somehow the movement of basketball messed up my Achilles, and I'm still in kind of recovery phase right now. But prior to that, I would stand almost the entire day, at least try to, if not half day. Like today, I did again a half day standing. So now you inspired me to finish our conversation standing. But the standing desk is really nice because it used to have back problems, especially when you sit really long time. But when you stand, it puts you in this odd workout that just continues throughout the entire day when you really feel your legs even starting to hurt. And that's the moment you need to embrace and say, okay, I'm actually working out. And the fact is you're standing and it's tiring if you stand for You think about it, you work for 7 hours almost. I mean, depends. Some might work even
more or less. Yeah. Yeah. But wait, I have to ask, is that a special chair behind you?
Oh, the chair. Okay. Yes. So the chair I inherited also from our sister company when we were doing moving. Mm-hmm. This one was an extra one, and it's from Autonomous.
Okay.
Let me see if I can show it to you here. It's pretty nice. It has a different setups as far as like how you want your back to be. Mm-hmm. And also it has a nice cushion.
Okay.
So it feels comfortable. It's definitely a pretty sweet chair. I know they're not the cheapest. These are.
Yeah. Getting a good chair is probably one of the best investments anyone can make in the professional field. Cause if you're sitting on your butt all day or a lot, yeah. I spent like $1,300 on a Herman Miller chair. Those are one of those fancy ergonomic that I've had for five years. Yeah. And I love it. My wife and I went on vacation once and I had to bring work with me. And I'm sitting at the dining room table of wherever we're at. And like, I get up after just 15 minutes and it was like a hard mm-hmm. wooden chair. It's like, oh, you could tell like the difference in how much you appreciate having a great work chair. Mm-hmm. But the last question I have to ask about your tech is, what is your phone?
Oh, I mean, of course, it's Apple. It's not the latest iPhone, but it definitely does the job.
Okay. Do you know which one you got?
Let me see. I stopped counting after all these updates they roll out.
Right.
Let me see. Hold on. Where did we do it? Where can we check? I already forgot.
Settings? Under settings. Yeah, it would be under settings.
Oh, general, about. So yeah. I have iPhone 7.
Seven.
No, name is iPhone. Sorry. Model name, iPhone 12.
Okay. It's like going, wow, that is.
It's an antique.
Yeah. It's like, wow, does that even work? But let me offer you. Go ahead.
Sorry. I have to tell you this funny story. So please. My oldest daughter, she's turning 13. So the phone is everything to her.
Yeah.
So we had passed down one of the phones. Don't know which model it was, hence my knowledge, but it was older. It still had the button. It wasn't all screen.
Oh, so
I think it was the last ones with the button. And she would not stop begging me for a new phone. She's like, Daddy, this doesn't work. And it goes into weird purple colors and does its own things. And I was like, Alice, this is an AI-driven phone. It has an AI built in. That's why it does that. She did not think it was funny.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I might have thrown the phone back at you for that comment.
I just wanted her to appreciate what she has until I got her a new one. So
I know.
Probably a better phone than I do, or one of the same ones.
Pardon the interruption. I hope you're enjoying the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast as much as I enjoy making them. Consider buying us a cup of coffee or two to help defray some of the production costs. Thanks and enjoy. Before we start the questions, I want to share with you at least three thoughts about running an Apple business, if I may.
Okay.
Number one, not only for the phone, but also for your hardware, you could always possibly lease those products.
Okay.
Go into the Apple store and ask to talk about leasing.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the phone program, I'm sure you're familiar with, whoever your carrier is. And of course, you can also upgrade and go onto that pay plan, if you will, at Apple. Same mm-hmm. thing. Similarly with their hardware. That's how I got my previous iMacs. I bought the studio outright. Along those same lines, have you obtained a Apple credit card?
No, I don't have one. No.
Consider applying for one because you get 3% cash back on any Apple purchase.
Oh, okay. That's good. Good to know.
Second, go to the Apple store and ask to set up a business account. They are free. Oh. Now, I always tell people that Apple seems to give you, if you will, a white glove treatment. Would you agree when you go in and you get help?
Certainly.
It's not perfect, but it's very good. And by getting a business account, you sort of get white glove on top of white glove, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get a special business consultant.
Okay.
So another thing to consider. Then lastly, and I blogged about this, I went to the MacStock conference outside of Chicago. And it's just for Apple enthusiasts. And they talk about how they use their Apple products for creativity and business, et cetera. Something you might want to check out. They had both virtual and in-person, and I try to go in-person every year, and it's really a wonderful group of people to learn more about your Apple products.
Very nice.
I will try to make sure to share all that with you once we're done. But let's get into the questions. What are the three tech steps an attorney can take to improve their firm's SEO performance?
I love this question, Michael. And I always talk about this, that best attorneys that have most successful law firm marketing campaigns are the ones that are actively involved in them. And the reality is, there's a lot of things you can do yourself. Number one is Google Business Profile.
Okay.
Generating reviews on your Google Business Profile is right now one of the biggest impact activities you can take to improve your MAP rankings. Okay. Let's take a step further. One, you're generating reviews. Number two, just improving your Google Business Profile presence, such as your photos, making sure you're categorizing yourself correctly, making sure that every little aspect of this digital property that is your law firm's Google Business Profile, you have invested maximum resources, maximum time you can. And believe me, that will pay off because Google is doing two things right now. Google Business Profiles are being served, like the MAP results. MAP results are served based on proximity. So if I'm searching for family lawyer, Google will share the closest ones to me because they want to make my life convenient. That's what the search engine is there for. And two, they will serve the most prominent ones, meaning which ones have the best reviews. Just the same approach when you're looking for a restaurant or a brunch spot. They serve you the ones with the best imagery, the best reviews, and the ones that are closest to you. So take that formula in mind and apply it to building out your own Google Business Profile. And I think this podcast attracts your audience is into technology, which means they should be also into developing their own, like getting a little bit more involved with some of these tech aspects where you can apply this technology knowledge.
Agreed.
If there's an area you will invest your time in, spend it in your Google Business Profile. Then.
So if I may, before you go on to your second answer, I'd like to pull on the first answer just a little bit. What do you do when you get a negative Google review?
Oh, one, definitely respond to it because maybe someone was actually upset and you can give them a transparent response to this situation, maybe even try to mitigate it. And by mitigating it, you can afterwards ask this person, say, maybe you can review it because you resolved the issue. Or the person can even update their review score and say, hey, we actually figured this out. Now, if it is your competition trying to leave negative reviews, which we've seen it happen, there are specific appeal steps you can take and you can possibly get them removed. But I would say it's more likely that someone was actually upset addressing it, trying to mitigate the issue, and seeing if they will maybe improve the score, maybe even remove the review. But same time, especially if the business is at large scale, you will be serving a lot of customers and some negative reviews might happen. I think the other side to it is just showcasing the positive ones and trying to cultivate natural flow of reviews. I was talking with another SEO not too long time ago, and he mentioned never have a completely perfect 5.0-star review profile because that is not natural. There's no business that's perfect in the world. There's always someone that will leave you 4 stars or maybe even 3 stars. Like, it's natural. You're a big business. There's a lot of dynamics. You're serving a lot of people. Things happen. And I think the biggest thing is addressing the issue reviews and even responding to the positive ones and just cultivating this ongoing dynamic of reviews of activity in your online profile, your online Google Business Profile.
It's interesting you say that. I ended up having a conversation with a client the other day, and she had mentioned to me something to the effect of, I looked over at your Google profile and you were the one we wanted to hire. And I'm like, may I ask what stood out? It says, you had some really good reviews about people who cared about you. I mean, felt that I cared about them and that I was trying to help them.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side, if I may, on the flip side, she's like, and I had to ask him, like, was like, there were a couple of negative reviews. She's like, yeah, but those reviews weren't really subject to who you are and what it is that you do and how you're trying to help people. It's really good to hear. I mean, it's no secret. I think I've got 4.5 out of 5, and it's because of a couple of, negative reviews.
Yep.
It happens. So like hearing how you're saying that nobody wants to have a 5 or shouldn't have a 5.
And I think people even more recognize the fact that you will have some negative reviews and then they dial in on those. Okay, I'm actually curious. How bad is it, right? Like, what was the situation? And maybe we all know the negative Nancy that's just always leaving negative reviews across different things. And I think as humans, we even are open to it. We're like, okay, that was the person who might just be always upset. Let's read the good ones and let's see which ones overpower which side. Right, right. And then make a logical decision.
I'll share a secret. I can't win every case. I wish I could. I'd be a lot richer, but it's the facts of reality. So tell me your second answer, please.
Second answer, I have to think about this one.
Okay.
But I think coming on these podcasts, I want to give really actionable tips on what attorneys or law firm operators can do on their own. Let's say you took the step one to develop the Google business profile. To educate yourself further within the map world, Google business profile world, you want to start tracking these Google map rankings, okay? I'm not talking about organic rankings because a lot of people have heard about these organic result rankings. I don't even want to think about that, okay? We're talking about just your Google business profile. Why don't you focus just on that? And you can set yourself up with tools that are called like GeoGrid rank trackers.
Okay.
Sounds fancy, but it's a tech podcast for attorneys. We actually built a tool ourselves. Don't want to self-promote it. There's plenty of other ones, but they're called GeoGrid rank trackers.
Okay.
Ours is called TrackRight.
Okay.
And for your listeners, we'll give a promotion, 3 months, just use it, have fun with it, because
I will definitely have a link on that because I know you're going to give it to me a little later.
Yes.
But tell us more about it.
So here's the idea behind the GeoGrid rank trackers. You track your rankings in 2 mile or 3 mile radius across your office location. Earlier, I mentioned that Google looks at the proximity of the searcher to the location where they would have to travel to. So this GeoGrid rank tracker shows you your exact map rankings in that 2 mile radius. And it's really cool. It's like a grid with little dots through it. And those dots to show you what are your map rankings in that radius. So let's say you're in Miami downtown and you your office is Miami downtown and you drive a little bit further out. You can see how these map rankings will fluctuate. Why it's important, just tracking these map rankings will be a good KPI for you to evaluate.
KPI is?
Key performance indicator.
Okay.
Let's say you start generating these reviews for your business profile. You want to see some kind of action or return on that, right?
Right, right.
Of course, you're anticipating the calls. But number one is just seeing how is this map ranking improving. And by taking all these activities on your Google business profile, like building them out, setting up the category, generating reviews, step two will be that you'll notice that your map rankings are starting to improve. Then step three, with tools like TrackRight, you can actually start tracking your calls. That gets a little bit more technical, which will be my number three tip, tracking your actual performance or just gathering data. Where is your intake calls coming from? And not everyone's instantly involved or invested in digital marketing. Mm-hmm. Once you start taking these baby steps towards that, it's just a fun game because now you're educated of, even if you're investing your own time, you want to see the return on that time.
But Chris, I want to refocus you just for a second though, because you're talking about if you look in a 2 mile radius from outside your office, you get an idea of where people are contacting you from. But for instance, like your company and my law office is national, if not international. So you just don't want to know about the people in 2 mile radius. You want to know about people everywhere. Mm. That can be expanded out. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Absolutely. And that's when you start looking at the organic rankings. Mm. And that's the difference between map and organics.
Okay.
Organics will deal a lot with your website. I like talking about Google business profiles because it's less technical. Like anyone with the access can manage it. It's not a big tech gap. You just jump in it and you can figure things out on your own. When it comes to the website, it gets a little bit more complicated because you need to figure out your content management systems. There's certain optimization elements you need to start thinking about, like title tags, sitemaps, heading tags. It gets a little more technical. That's where you might need someone's assistance to help you build out the necessary content banks for those type of keywords you're trying to, or let's not say keywords, let's say what kind of audience you're trying to attract that possibly could hire your services. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of law practice specifics you need to talk about on your website.
So let me put a pinpoint there, because I think you're sort of bleeding into the second question. But it sounds like based on your first answer, your first set of answers, that really you need to pay attention to what your website and presence on the internet is doing.
Yeah. It's good to have a benchmark on with the same tool we're talking about, TrackRite.
Right.
You could also track your organic rankings or those nationwide keywords, or maybe even location-based keywords.
But whether it's your organic, your paid, your map trackings, you need to pay attention to this. Not that you have to look at it every day or spend hours upon hours, but you need to pay attention to this. And of course, one thing that would help is, for instance, which leads into the second question, and we're going to talk a little bit about you and your business, which is, what are three reasons a lawyer would want to hire a digital marketing firm focused on lawyers versus any other run-of-the-mill digital marketing firm?
That's a great question. Main reason is the specialization, because law, there's actually, let me tell you a story. When I started working at On The Map, I came in as a website project manager, and I had a great site that I was managing, and I think it was a family law practice in Houston. Okay. And the training I received was, it was explaining the differences between practice areas, but maybe I didn't hone in on it as much as I should. I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. Lawyers, they serve different types of audiences. That's how I thought about it.
Right.
Then I learned, so for this family lawyer, I put information about personal injury just because I was like, hey, here's your design mock-up. And the designer had put in like personal injury icons, not because of the design, but just like, oh, here's a couple other practice areas we offer, because I'm from Europe and I don't think the law firms in Europe are as specialized as here in the US. So one can think just that any law firm might service all these different segments. There's like not such a big specialization. So then I start the journey, obviously. They were quite upset. And I was like, okay, what are they exactly upset? And then I realized that they're family law only law firm.
Right.
And then I started thinking like, okay, that makes that each law firm is specialized heavily. And what I'm trying to portray with this story is that average digital marketer who's not exposed to law world itself might not recognize these nuances of how deep each practice area goes. What's the difference between corporate law and personal injury? Seems like, oh, they're all attorneys, but it's night and day what each one of them are offering. Like corporate lawyers, corporate law firms are not even as heavily involved in things like SEO and VC. They're more focused on email marketing and cultivating more network referrals, because if they had a client who was Uber, you know, that one individual, that one client will bring him other heavily funded clients, versus personal injury is completely consumer driven and you're just going after every possible direct response keyword out there. So that's my point. Average marketer would not know difference between both. And when it comes to things like SEO and PPC, when let's say pay-per-click manager would look at personal injury law campaign and keywords costing $300-$400, I think their job will just drop and they'll have no idea what to do because the client acquisition costs will be through the roof.
And just for the listener's sake, SEO is search engine optimization and PC is paid per click.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for filling that in.
No offense, just for the listener's sake.
No, absolutely. I just get fired up and then all the abbreviations start coming out.
No, you're fine. Please continue.
And I'll bring this full circle. The specialized agencies have already playbooks and formulas in mind on how to approach different practice areas, how to approach different PPC campaigns. Law digital marketing is one of the most competitive niches in the world.
Wow.
With finances, right there with health. It's very competitive, especially metropolitan cities and personal injury or criminal, family for that matter too. Insanely competitive. So companies without that specialization will have extra learning curve to become competitive if they haven't done it before. And maybe the company has the chops to fill in that learning curve, but the chances are it's just going to take them a lot longer. And they will be learning on your investment rather than going to a firm that's been doing that. And they already know exactly your situation, how your business is being ran, and how to build a marketing campaign for you.
And you don't want to be their guinea pig.
No, not at all.
So, Chris, just to focus for the third answer to the second question. Is there anything that you see that's unique for a law firm marketing agency compared to just the run-of-the-mill marketing agency?
Absolutely. Besides the first factor we already talked about, which is understanding difference between practice areas, then it goes deeper into, if we're talking about search engine optimization, someone has to develop high volume of content for your website to rank. You need to build topical authority around the specific practice area that your law firm is offering. That is a heavy task to execute for just an average marketing agency, because you need to have legal content writers that are specialized and have done legal content writing in the past.
Okay.
On top of that, attorneys are very particular how this content is written. Righteously so, because they don't want to be misrepresented when it comes to different bar regulations, when it comes to different laws for that matter. Laws in Illinois or laws in Florida, they differ quite a bit when it comes to personal injury and other aspects. For an average marketing agency that hasn't done this type of content writing, it will be, again, that learning curve that they will have to jump in, and guess who's going to be paying for it? That's going to be the law firm owner that maybe they can really quickly figure that out. But the chances are it's not as easy, and someone still will have to understand that process. And then another aspect I wanted to mention, particularly for search engine optimization, legal directories. There's quite heavy process, not heavy process, but there is a registration process one has to go through to get their firm accepted in these directories. These directories actually play a really nice role in search engine optimization. They pass a lot of authority back to the websites. Legal marketing agencies, in some cases, not even all legal marketing agencies, because it's a time-consuming task, you need to have someone on your behalf going there and creating your profiles, optimizing those profiles, adding all the most up-to-date information. So average agency might not even think of that. Or when they start a process, they realize, oh, wow, I need an attorney's bar number. We need to go through this step. There's a lot of steps you have to go through to get your law profile, attorney profile approved. Now imagine this person who is already struggling to write your content. Now they're like, oh my God, now I need to go build these profiles. They're probably quite hesitant to call up the attorney and say, hey, while we're struggling with this content, I'm trying to figure out how to get your profile approved on Avvo or lawyers.com. There's a whole big list of them. So at the end, there's just that experience of doing that over and over makes the company a lot more proficient to execute those tasks.
You probably see me grimacing a little bit in the sense that I don't particularly like those lawyer directories that you refer to, in particular, because all it seems to do is if you want to comment on any complaint, you have to join our company and maybe pay us a fee to be a member of our company. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you're not hiring us per se, but if you want to address any of these questions. So I'm a little bit, no offense, I personally am a little bit poo on that, because also a lot of them seem to just copy over whatever came from Google My Business. So
yeah, that is true. However, they do pass a lot of authority back to your website. So if you're engaged in actual search engine marketing campaign, you will need those directory profiles, because best performing law firms will have those just because it's a backlink going back to your site. So it passes authority back to your site. And what differentiates your website from a website I would build, Christoph's Rankings can get a profile on any of the law directories. However, Michael Eisenberg can't, because you're an actual barred attorney and Google sees that. So that passes back authority to your website versus someone else. So what ends up happening in SEO world, people who win are the ones with most backlinks. And if you, let's say you're a relatively big law firm, this is a great tip for your listeners and maybe even some other marketers. Let's say have five attorneys in your law firm, go and build these profiles for each one of your attorneys, and then make sure all those links are going back to your website. Because usually you just see it for a managing partner, maybe a few other law attorneys on the law firm, those profiles. But if you go and build out those profiles for every single one, now you're multiplying these citations coming back to your site, and Google's saying, wow, look at this law firm. All these knowledgeable attorneys, they must be doing great work. And then on top of that, you have tons of reviews coming in, referencing all of them. That creates this these digital entities that tells Google, wow, this law firm is really notable. They're doing a great job.
Active. And I'm tracking. And I get it. And I think that's a pretty good tip for the listener. I just have my personal disgruntlement but that's just me, and listeners should do what they think is best for them. And I'll just back away from that. And in order to back away from that, we'll switch gears with our third question. As a host of your own podcast, what are your top three tech tips to make your podcast sound and look great?
Number one is getting a mic.
With your Blue Yeti, it sounds great.
Thank you. And here's another interesting tip in regards to my Blue Yeti. There's something called gain. So my gain, when I started using it, was really turned on. So I had to tone it down because the gain was so heavy that the sound was actually more, it was actually creating more negative sound effects than actually creating my sound clear and more recognized. Second tip, which I haven't utilized yet, is having more confined area where you're recording, almost like a sound booth.
Okay.
And have little foam walls or some sound bouncing element.
Something to help. It's not to bounce, it's to absorb the sound.
There you go. Yeah. So, sound absorbing walls.
No offense to you, your office is not really set up for podcasting because you've got a window and the sound, I think, will bounce off of that. And then you got bare walls left and right. So whether you put foam up, or if you look in my office, if you look behind me, of course, the audience can't see behind me. I've got shelves and as you can probably see, I collect mugs from everywhere where I go. So it's a full wall, not necessarily with sound foam, but it's enough to help absorb the sound and I don't get too much echoing in here.
You're absolutely right. And that's a feedback I've gotten from my content director.
And by the way, I'm not picking on you. I'm not picking on you.
It's okay. It's a reminder of what I needed. We actually didn't have a dedicated room in our office that we want to turn into a sound room. But we just moved here, so we're trying to space out all the expenses month over month. We just got a new fridge, so that was a good start.
I think keeping the employees happy with food and beverage is probably more important than whether or not you're having a little bit of echo during your podcast.
Right, exactly.
So that was two. Three?
Three? I'd say video, making sure you prepare for, I guess we're talking about podcasts.
Sorry.
I'm thinking that my third tip would be learning your own pronunciation, how many ums you use, likes, okays. Yeah. Just improving those little verbiage nuances we're so used to making in day-to-day conversations. When you're in a podcast, you want to make sure your conversation is clear. And I'm still learning this, Michael. You're a master at it. I still have a long way to go.
Let me share with you in the audience two things real quick. Not to interrupt you, but this is to sort of go along with what you're saying, is if I start thinking too much about what the question is, or what I'm going to say, I usually screw up the sentence when I say it out loud.
Oh, that's interesting. So, I can see that happening, definitely.
I really have to slow down. And trust me, I'm going to go edit back. Like in the very beginning, I know there's like one or two sentences that I just screwed up. Uh-huh. The second is that I don't know what your producer uses. And I think you said you have a producer.
Yes.
So I have a producer who helps fix the sound, if you will, and prepare some other show notes and whatnot. But the first thing I do is I take the MP4 file and I use a program called Descript. It will give me a transcript of the entire podcast. It's a sound editing program. And what it works is that it will allow me to literally follow the transcript and I can like delete certain sections or add add markers, chapters, or it has this great function where it's like it will delete all of the more than 1 second pauses. And then even after all that, like it will find all of them and say, do you want to delete these individually? You want to delete all of them? It's a great program. I love it.
What was the name of it?
It's called Descript.
Oh, Descript.
It's like, no, Descript.
Oh, I see.
And great. So my background, I have a master's in engineering. And I could see the sound waves of the podcast at the bottom. So if there's still too much of a pause, like it may not be 1 second that automatically shrinks it.
Yeah.
I may cut it down. And of course, I could easily go in and see like, no, I really don't want this part, or I do want this part. Because during our podcast today, There's a couple of times where we pause just to clear up a couple of things. And I will take that out myself because I don't know how your producer works, but they usually do it based on the length of the podcast recording. Yeah. So if I can kill out 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and sometimes when I do these podcast recordings, for instance, you and I talked for about 8 minutes. I noticed I started and stopped the recording so that I didn't have to cut that out myself later because the producer doesn't need to hear 8-10 minutes of us just chit-chatting. And trust me, I usually schedule these for an hour. And trust me, I've had podcast recordings last 2 hours because the guest and I are just like, we're talking computers and stuff, like not necessarily central to the podcast, but we're just talking about whatever. And I can easily cut that out myself. Does that make sense?
No, it totally does.
And it reduces the file. And there's so many neat things you can do with this program that I really do like it.
It's great.
So for instance, I just did and it will find the ums and say, do you want to delete them? Now, mind you, I want to keep these two ums in there. Now three, because for example, for the listener and of course for you.
But
I did interrupt you. So please continue with your third answer.
I think you hit it right on. It's improving your speech, recognizing these little style or nuances we're making, ums, likes, you knows, and then the tandems, which I get to fall into pretty quickly, especially when I get very excited about topic.
Yeah.
And that just deviates the clarity of the topic because you're jumping from one topic to another without concise point and improving clarity of the messaging along with removing the little style issues. Those are things I'm personally working on to improve the content quality and the information exchange I'm having with either the guests on my podcast or the podcasts I'm going on.
One of the things I've learned is when I'm not sure what I'm going to say, I will pause instead of rambling on. Because if you're rambling on, it's just wasting energy and doesn't make you sound necessarily articulate.
Yep.
And the problem is also on the flip side is that people get nervous when there's silence.
That's so true.
And so they feel that they have to keep talking. And this is something I think I really learned over the past 20 some odd years that I've been a lawyer, because when you're in court, when you're making that argument, you get nervous when there's just silence. But on the other hand, I'm taking a second and thinking. Now, mind you, if it lasts 10 minutes, that could be a problem. But
especially in court.
Yes. And there's a oral argument I did at a court of appeals about 7 weeks ago that I'm sure I've paused as I'm thinking, because instead of me rambling off as an idiot, if you will, or nervous that, hey, I'm trying to hide something, so I'm trying to come up with an excuse, better just to think things through. And of course, I just didn't again.
It's funny when you started catching them.
Yep. Sorry, I have to laugh. Chris, I want to thank you for being on the podcast today. Please tell us, where can people find you?
Michael, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there, Christoph Sprankens. You can also find me on Twitter. I like to tweet quite a bit. And our website, we have a vast information there. Check out our site. It's onthemap.com. And if you're in podcasts, you can also check out my podcast, which similar to yours, Michael, I'm going deep into just law firm digital marketing. So I bring on different marketers that are just specialized in law firm marketing. So you get to hear from them about their experiences, different nuances of what are they focused on, whether it's pay-per-click, search engine optimization, or any other topic. So I constantly try to bring in law firm specialized marketers or law firm operators who are extremely successful running their law firm marketing. So the name of the podcast is Law Firms on the Map, hence the play on our name a little bit there. So yeah, that's it.
I will be sure to have all that in the show notes. And again, I want to thank you. You have a great day, okay?
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast. Our next episode will be posted in about 2 weeks. If you have any ideas about a future episode, please contact me at michaeldj@thetechsavvylawyer.page. Have a great day and happy lawyering.